Better? 1, 2? All right, thanks. Good morning. Glad to see everyone out for our study this morning. We'll be in Matthew 25 and part of Matthew 26 here just in a minute. We'll run through a little quick review of 24 before we get there. We'll get started with that. So, again, just repeat it over and over. I know everybody knows by now, but we're in the last week of the life of Christ. We're down to, this is still probably late on Tuesday, at the end of the day, close of the day, as they leave the temple here in a minute. Just a few hours before the actual crucifixion. Two slides we've been using over and over to remind us of what's about to happen and why Jesus came to save his people from their sins. He came to seek and save the lost and to give his life a ransom for many. And that's us, and that's about the time it's come now in his life. So, last part of chapter 23, they're in the temple. He's been teaching all day. He saw the widow cast in her mites. And then they get ready to leave the temple. And as they do, the disciples are looking at the great white limestone stones there. We talked tonight about the size, the humongous size of these stones, and their beauty with all the gold overlay that Herod had put into them, and the absolute just brilliance of the temple building itself. What a beautiful structure it was. Not only that, it was the very presence of God. Going all the way back to the days of the tabernacle, that's the place where God dwelled among his people. Now, unfortunately, the Jewish leaders by now had turned a lot of the worship into things that shouldn't be. We talked about the high priesthood is no longer necessarily under Aaron as a politically appointed position and things like that. So, but it is the place for God to dwell among them. And this computer-generated picture here, we're looking from the southwest, looking at the south end of the temple building, temple complex. This large 30-acre or so plus area. You see the Kidron Valley and across the Mount of Olives behind it, this beautiful structure. But as they leave and talk about the beauty, Jesus tells them it's going to be destroyed. There'll be one stone left on top of the other. It's going to all be gone. So they go across down through the valley and they sit down on the Mount of Olives. You can just picture them looking back across at the temple. And there's some of the destruction. And they want to know more about it. Want to know when and why this is going to happen. And they start asking questions. So we talked about three different options, a way to break up chapters 24 and 25. There are probably more, but at least these three. One would take chapter 24 and make it about the destruction of Jerusalem. Chapter 25 about the second coming and the end of time. Another one would take and make an intermixing between the two so that it's hard to tell what you're talking about, one or the other, and some of the phrases may even be dual-like, imply to both. Some people look at it that way. And the other way then that I talked more about Wednesday night was taking and making a break at Matthew chapter 24, verse 35. And things before that being the destruction of Jerusalem, after that, start talking about the second coming. We talked about that Wednesday night. We won't dive back through all that again now. But some scholars have said this is a very, very one of the most difficult chapters to figure out how to rightly divide as far as where that break off occurs there. But in the destruction of Jerusalem, you got to think about this is when it's gone. And think about the disciples here trying to comprehend this. No more daily sacrifices, no more annual feast. When three times a year the men would all gather there in that big Temple Mountain area for the feast they come for. No more place for prayer for God to be among his people. All that would be destroyed. And it'd be with the crumbling of the cross, Christ, the end of that Mosaic dispensation and all the ritual sacrifices and things that go with it, and the coming in of Christ and his church. And all this, of course, comes down in AD 70 when the Rome comes in. And this is the final judgment on the Jewish people for rejecting God, rejecting him, rejecting Christ. Still necessary for Christ to die for us. And he's not going to make the Jewish people do what they're going to do. He's going to use their wickedness to accomplish this task, as he's done many times in the past. So the Romans come in then in AD 70, and they put set a siege around and build mounds up to breach the walls of the city. And Nero is the emperor when this all starts. He dies, and Vespasian is the general, and then his son Titus takes over, actually the one that comes in and finishes the destruction of Jerusalem. A couple of lesson slides we did not get to Wednesday night. Think about this. This has been for generations, going like I said, back to the tabernacle, the place of God's presence among his people. The temple, the tabernacle, and then the temple. Solomon's beautiful temple. Yes. Right. Yep. Yep. Gone, and now we've got a new temple. Different place. God's no longer using that as his place of dwelling among the people. Where is he now? What's the temple now? Think about that. There's no more this structure. Don't need this beautiful structure anymore, because there's a different temple. Where is temple? So that the very presence of God has changed. The place of his presence has changed. And then I mentioned that it's necessary to die for God to complete his plan. The plan is laid out from the foundations of the world. And the point is, we're just hours, literally hours away from this death now, as we go through that. And then we'll get into the lesson today. As we think about it, I want you to think about the prepared. Being prepared. That's one of the big points I'll get to in a minute about Matthew chapter 25, is that of preparation. So we'll move that. So open up to Matthew 25. This is going to be so much easier. There's three parables here. Everybody knows them. They're very familiar territory for all of us. Clicker on my click. Hello? There it goes. Sorry. Okay. Matthew 25. Final judgment on mankind. Second coming of Christ. Christ in his second coming. Three parables. First, we have the parable of called the 10 virgins and their preparedness. Then we have the parable of talents. And then the judgment scene with the sheep and the goats. And those are also all very familiar. But we'll go through them and talk about them this morning for a little while. Two main points. We don't know when it's going to happen. Nobody knows. Nobody sitting here knows. Nobody on earth knows. Nobody on earth has ever known. All the guesses that's been done, we don't know. And therefore, be prepared. Always be prepared. And those are the two lessons that have come out over and over and over this morning as we go through these parables and talk about them. Now, to get a little background for the parable of the virgins and the bridegroom coming and the wedding feast, read this. There's a custom sometimes used among the Jews on that occasion, that is the occasion of a wedding, that the bridegroom came, attended with his friends, late at night to the house of the bride, where she was expecting him, and she attended with her bridesmaids, who, upon notice that the bridegroom was coming, were to go out with lamps in their hands to light the way for him to come into the house. He would come in then for this ceremony, the formality of it, and celebrating the marriage with great cheerfulness and festivities, and that was it. So, the lamps. They would go out, don't have all the street lights we've got now. They would go out and light the way in a ceremonial fashion for the bridegroom to come in to the house of the bride for the wedding. That was the customary type thing. So, these 10 virgins are there waiting for the announcement that the bridegroom's coming. They're at the bride's house, waiting for the word to come that the bridegroom is on his way to the house. Now, a sideline note that's important is that 5 had taken some extra oil for their lamp and 5 had not. Just have to keep that in mind. So word comes that the bridegroom is coming. And the virgins start to get ready to go out and to light the way for him to come in. And when they do this, 5 of them realize that, oh, we don't have enough oil. Our lamp's not going to burn long enough for the ceremony to come in and get the bridegroom in. So they want to borrow some from the 5 who have extra. There's a lamp, a picture that I found. A wick up here in the top. It's got a little bracket, like, I don't know if it's made to hang on the wall or if it's just hanging on, you know, for display like this, but here's where the olive oil would go in for to burn for the lamp there. So 5 of these that didn't have any extra oil wanted to borrow some from the 5 who had taken the extra oil for the lamp. And they said, no, we don't have enough. If we give you some of our oil, then we won't have enough. So you better go buy some from those who sell it. So while they were gone to do that, the bridegroom shows up. And those who were prepared don't know when he's going to come. Okay, that's one of the big points. Don't know when the bridegroom's going to come. And that's what's come that he's coming. And those who are prepared go out, light the way for him, and go into the marriage feast with him. And the door was shut. Another key point. The door was shut. That was it. We kind of have a little custom, I guess, in our times that once the bride comes in and is seated, then nobody else is supposed to be seated at a wedding. You've got to get there before the bride comes in, makes her appearance. Was a typical type thing here. Once the bridegroom comes in, the door was shut. The marriage proceeded. So then the 5 who had gone to buy more, all the 5 who were not prepared for the story here, came back, and they went in. But the door was shut. And the word was, I don't know you. You weren't prepared. You didn't get here. You didn't get in. Now, all 10 were invited. All 10 were invited to the feast. Only 5 were admitted. Think about which 5? The 5 who were prepared. Just the story that we're trying to get to with the parable here. The 5 who came prepared. All 10 could have gone in. All 10 could have gone in. If the other 5 had been prepared, they could have gone with the bridegroom as well. So, preparation. Preparations to be made, awaiting the bridegroom. Be prepared when they announce what is coming, that he is coming. Prepared were admitted. Door was shut on the unprepared. And what's Jesus doing? He's describing his second coming. Don't know when it's going to happen. Be prepared. Don't know when it's going to happen. Be prepared. When do you prepare? Always. Because we don't know when it's going to happen. Okay, moving to the next one. Verse 14. It's another familiar, very familiar parable. That is the parable of the talents. And this judgment is compared now to a man that's going to go away into a far country. Of course, when he's going to return, it'll be the unknown factor here. So he calls in his servants, and 3 specifically are mentioned here in this particular parable. And he gave his possessions into their care. And they're given different amounts, each one according to his ability. Point. So one got 5 talents, one got 2, and one got 1. Each according to his ability. Now, a talent was a weight of money. It could be gold, it could be silver. Worth a lot of money. It's not like the denarius we talk about, the denarius being a day's wage. No, this was much, much more. This is big money we're talking about here. And here it represents, in this parable, it represents the responsibility. It was given to the servant with a responsibility to care for it while the master is away. was charged to take this money and go out and handle it for the master while he's gone. So, the servant who had the 5 talents, he had more ability than the other two, if given 5 talents, he took that and he went out and he gained 5 more talents. By using the ability he had for the master, he put his money to use and he gained 5 more. The servant who had 2 talents, didn't have as much ability as the one to handle the 5, but he used the 2 he had and went out and gained 2 more. Then the servant who received 1 talent. Now, nothing wrong with that. Given to him according to his ability. But what did he do with it? Instead of going out and gaining more with the one he had, using the ability he had, whatever it was that the master recognized, he went and dug a hole and hid his master's money. So, after some period of time, a long period, I think is the word is used, some indefinite time, no time given, don't know when, the master returns. And he wants a report from his servants. So the one who had 5 talents comes in and says, I've gained 5 more. I put your money to work. I used my ability, and I have gained 5 more talents. And the master is well pleased with it. The one who had given 2 talents, used his 2 talent ability that he had, took the responsibility, and he gained 2 more. And his words of the master were exactly the same words for the one who had gained 5. The fact he only gained 2 was not criticized at all. So both of these, well done. Good and faithful servant. Look at those words. A good and faithful servant. You're faithful over a few things, I'll make you faithful over many. Enter into the joys of your Lord. Both are the same. So I don't have to gain 5 talents. If I've got a 2-talent ability, my responsibility is to use that 2-talent ability and gain 2 more. I got the same exact message as the guy who had 5 and gained his 5. I just have to use what I have. Use what the master gave me. Because each one had maximized the ability he had. Remember the little thing with Mary anointed the feet of Jesus? She had done what she could. That's all we have to do. Do what we can. Use the ability the master has given us. But now the servant had 1 talent. He didn't use his ability. He did not use what the master gave him. He started making excuses. And excuses are not accepted. The master says, take that one from him and give it to the one that has 10. And cast that wicked servant out. He's unprofitable. He's no good to me. Put him out, whether it be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I'm not sure we recognize what weeping and gnashing of teeth really means. It scares us to death, it seems like. So what's the lesson? We all have different abilities. But we all have abilities. We all have some ability. Each servant had received something. There's no record of some servant being brought in and said, well, you don't have any ability, I'm not giving you anything at all. No, 5, 2, and 1. Each one had something. And we're expected to return goods to our master based on our abilities, based on what he's given us. We can work and gain. But if we don't use them, they're taken away from us. And judgment is passed on us because of that. Now, this little thought. Can I imagine myself? This is a chapter about the judgment scene and Christ's second coming. Can I imagine myself standing before the great judge making excuses? Oh, but I would have done this, but Johnny. Oh, I would have done that, but you know, I thought I really tried, but I can't even imagine standing there before the judge, the great judge, making excuses like this man with one talent did. Oh, well, Master, I knew you were such and such, and I just went and didn't do anything. I just went and hid the money. Can you imagine? Excuses were not accepted. Take it away from him. Give it to the other one. Cast the wicked servant, the unprofitable servant, to outer darkness. Outer darkness. Darkness beyond darkness. This weeping and gnashing of teeth. Okay, comments on the first two. Anybody, if we want to take off, we're up too far here. Anybody got thoughts? Left out. All right, verse 31. Sheep and the goats. Son of Man comes in all his glory. This is the judgment scene. The angels are with him. And he's sitting on his throne. Throne of his glory. And the judgment time has come. All nations. Now we're talking about sheep and goats in this parable. But keep in mind, we're talking about people. All nations are gathered to him. This is judgment of people. Sheep and goats are used to illustrate the point. But this is people. This is us. It's not sheep and goats. It's just the illustration point to separate the two. We're talking about us. All nations were gathered before. Everybody. That separation occurs. Sheep are put on one side, goats on the other. Again, illustrating a point. Sheep on the right, goats on the left. Then the king is going to say to those on his right, the sheep, come, you blessed of my father, inherit the kingdom prepared to you from the foundation of the world. Come. Now, that word is so much more comforting than the next word we're going to see here, depart. Come, come, come be with me. Come, you're blessed. I've got a special place for you. It's been prepared for you from the foundations of the world. Special place. Come. Then he explains to them why they were chosen. Because you did this and did this and did this. But you know what? They don't understand. Master, when do we ever see you like this? When do we ever see you naked and needing clothes or hungry and needing food? We don't understand what you're saying to us. Why? You did it to the least of one of these, my brethren. You did it to me. Now, we didn't do it to Jesus directly. We did it to each other. We did it to those who had need. We did it to those who needed help. We served one another. Remember our little theme from a few years ago? And Jesus says, in doing that, you're really doing it to me. Then there's the other side, the goats, the ones on the left, depart. So much harsher than the word come, depart. Cursed. Aren't you blessed? Depart, you're cursed. To the everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. No inheritance. No special place prepared for you. Depart. You're cursed. Go be where the devil and his angels are. Explains why they were rejected. Again, they don't understand either. But guess what? If you did not do it to the least of these, my brethren, you didn't do it to me. Same thing. Just in reverse. So the goats are going away. The people on the left, it's not really goats, it's not really sheep, it's people. people on the left will go away to everlasting punishment, and the righteous to eternal life. So, Son of Man rewards those who are busy caring for the needs of others. We don't directly serve Jesus in this matter. He says you did it to other people. You did it to least of these, my brethren. You did it to those who are around you, those who had a need. You took care of that need. And in doing that, you're doing it for me. And those who did nothing were cast out. Somebody who's got a Bible handy. Trent, look at Romans 2. Read Romans 2, 5 through 11, please. I should have had somebody ahead of time. I didn't do it. I'm sorry. Romans 2, 5 through 11. Now listen to this, what's said here, and think about what we just talked about here. How it compares the two. Romans 2, 5 through 11. What's coming? Either you got a choice of wrath, indignation, or glory and honor and peace based on the deeds we've done. Fighting with. So what's the lesson? The lesson is a choice. I have a choice. You have a choice of whether I'm going to do or not do. You did it to the least of these, my brethren. You didn't do it to the least of these, my brethren. My choice. I can work, or I can offer excuses. Okay? Remember Matthew 7, 21? Not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. But he who does the will. It's a doing. We serve Christ by doing. Okay? Yeah, I know there's a lot of things that, you know, don't kill, don't steal, don't. There's a lot of don'ts. But don'ts aren't even mentioned in this chapter. It's doing. It's having the oil to be prepared. It's having the willingness to go out and work and gain more talents. It's doing for one another. Okay, chapter 26. Got just a few verses to that. Look at chapter 26, the dissertation here, the speech, the conversation is ended. And we look at this being a long thing. You know, it covers two chapters, or 24 and 25. But you can read both chapters in 10 minutes or less. So it's not like Jesus preached a three-hour sermon to them. It's nothing like that. It's just a little short 10-minute explanation of what he was talking about. He says, now the Passover is 2 days away. It's on Thursday night. Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. Actually, Friday night, excuse me. Caiaphas. I tried to figure out which one is right. And everywhere I looked, there's one or the other. We get the right one. Caiaphas is the high priest. The Sanhedrin will be the court, the Jewish court that Jesus will come before, the elders, the high court of the Jews. Look at that. And they determined to put him to death. But he's been there in the temple, right under their nose, you might say, right there where they could just get him. But they don't do it for because of the people. The people consider him, if not the Messiah, at least a great prophet. And they don't dare take him in the front of the people and stir up a big riot, a big crowd. So they're looking for a time and a place to get him. And Judas just falls right into their hands. Judas goes to him and starts bargaining with them about finding a time and betraying him. So they give him 30 pieces of silver to figure out a place, a time they can get Jesus without stirring up the crowd. So once they've got him, it's okay. The crowd gets upset then, that's one thing, but it's that initial arrest that they're concerned about. So Jesus starts now looking for this time. When can I betray him? When can they come get him where the crowd won't see it and won't be a big ruckus over it? So now it's time to get ready for the Passover feast. So Jesus sends disciples into the city, and this is actually back into Jerusalem, to get ready for the Passover feast. He says, go into the city, there you're going to meet a man with a pitcher of water. And he's going to lead you to a house that has an upper room, and go there, and it'll be a room prepared, and there you can get ready for the Passover feast for us together. They did. Went in and found the man with the pitcher of water, went in, and everything was just like Jesus said it would be. And they went in to prepare the Passover meal, just like he said. All right, a couple lessons. I quit. We've already talked about several of these. All 10 could have entered a feast. Preparation's a big thing. Being ready. The prepared ones were admitted. The door was shut. Okay? This is the same thing we've already talked about two or three times. Talents, we all have abilities. Different ones have different abilities. We're expected to use our abilities to return good to the master. Our abilities. We can work and gain more abilities. Unused abilities are taken away, and judgment's passed on those who don't use what they have. There's going to be a judgment. Righteous rewarded for the righteous deeds they've done. The wicked are punished for not doing the Lord's work. Nothing said here about doing wrong. This whole judgment scene here is about the failure to do good. Keep that in our mind. Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's not like, oh, I'm a goat, I'll always be a goat. No. At the judgment scene, at that point in time when it happens, then my destiny is determined. I am there. So, it's, what Mike's point is, through life, somebody says, oh, you're a goat, you'll always be a goat. No, that's not true. Okay. I'm a sheep, I'll always be a sheep. That's not true either. So, in life, you're not a sheep or you're a goat until the judgment scene. And that's when that determination is made. I can go from one side to the other, either direction, during my lifetime. But when the judgment scene occurs, I'll either be put on the right hand or the left, based on what I've done or not done. Criticized for not doing, punished for not doing the Lord's work. Clear choice. I do or I don't do, one or the other. Think about these three parables I talked about. Virgins, preparedness, the talents, and the sheep and goats. Give us a song. I'd love to print. Maybe you can read it. When Jesus comes to reward his servants, judgment scene, whether it's noon or night, we don't know. Faithful to the Lord, will he find us watching? With our lamps all trimmed and bright, where did that come from? If at the dawn of the early morning, he shall call us one by one, not the congregation, the individual, one by one. Went to the Lord, we restore our talents. Will he answer thee? Well done. That's what he said to the one who had five talents, gained five more, the two gained two more. Well done. Blessed are those the Lord finds watching. In his glory they shall share. Come, come. If you come to the dawn or midnight, are we ready? Will we be ready? Are we watching? Are we waiting for the bridegroom to come back? Our lamps bright? Plenty of oil? Our talents there? Ready to give back to him? And share in his glory? The song obviously comes from Matthew 25. Yeah, I think that's all I've got. Somebody else got a comment or thought? We're down into chapter 26 now, so we're down to the last part here. So we'll get into the activities of the Passover. What goes on there with Jesus washing his disciples' feet, and then move on from there to the betrayal, etc. as we move on. So, okay, you got about 2 minutes to spare.